Hello and welcome back to Talking Europe. Strategic autonomy is a buzz phrase in Brussels as the EU tries to ramp up its capabilities in key industrial sectors. Defence is, of course, a major focus for those efforts, but calls have grown for the bloc to boost its presence in space as well. Space is seeing weaponization and hybrid warfare. Indeed, the EU Commission says that it is just as contested as land, sea, air, or the cyber field. Europe does have some world-class systems, such as Galileo or Copernicus. But when it comes to the space sector as a whole, it suffers from fragmentation and underinvestment, similar to the problems that have bedeviled its defence sector. The global spacecraft market and the global launching market are heavily dominated by the US and China, with Starlink alone accounting for most of the growth of the launch market. Well, to discuss all this, I'm joined by two MEPs from the Sky and Space Intergroup at the European Parliament. Asita Kanko is a Belgian MEP from the European Conservatives and Reformists and a vice president of that intergroup. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And I'm here also with Christophe Grudler, who's a French MEP from Renew Europe and co-president of the Sky and Space Intergroup. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Christophe, so do you think there has been a sea change in European thinking on space?
It's clear that now everybody understands that space is crucial, especially for defense, because without satellites, you have no image to see where are the enemy's tank. Without satellites, we are unable to have secure communication with your allies. And we also have nothing to have a guidance for your plane or missiles, for example. That's the reason why it's very crucial to invest in space in order to have this strategic autonomy on space.
Yeah, Asita Kanko, so on this militarization of space I mentioned, we know from Western intelligence services that China and Russia, for example, are testing offensive weapons in space, potentially to knock out satellites. Do you think Europe is ready for this sort of conflict?
I think we are never entirely ready. We need to be keeping up. And Europe has a lot of delays in keeping up on the military field internationally, and especially not only in Sky and Space, but also in our full defense ecosystem. But that's why also the Sky and Space Intergroup is very important, and a new mindset in Europe that is actually now stressing the fact that we need to invest in that perspective, that we need to have our autonomy, that we need to push our businesses, and that we need to be available to new ideas and see how we can control our own space, because otherwise other people are going to control it for us.
Yeah. On the investment side of things, Christophe Grudler, what are the problems then? What do we need to overcome in Europe?
The problem that in the past, we were the first one. We were the for the launch, we have a lot of commercial satellites, geostationary satellites, and we have a lot of money for this. And the States and Europe did nothing because the private sector was there. But now it's clear that we have new satellites with low orbits and more satellites, and the sector is totally different today, and we need to invest in those sectors. It's clear, for example, today in the European Union, we only have 15 billion for space policy. It's clearly not enough. And in the future, we're asking for 60 billion euro for different space projects.
Do you think that's realistic, that target of 60 billion, given the fragmentation we've seen and the lack of private sector involvement when we compare to the United States, for example?
Well, I think it's realistic, and also we are going to fight for it, of course. You know, when past term, you know that we came up, the Commission came up with enhancing the European defense ecosystem, and this is a mindset that we already had in Flanders with the Flemish government led by the NVA. We were working on enhancing this defense ecosystem. So at European level, we need to focus on that, and that brings us to be less fragmented. We have also been speaking about a common procurement policy. So this is going to put us in a position where we are going to have a stronger voice on the international stage. Also, when we speak about with the Americans and when we speak about the supply chain for our sectors that are involved, and it's going to create more power for us. So I believe it's realistic, and that's why we are also fighting for it.
I think it's worth reminding our viewers that, especially those perhaps farther away from Europe, that we don't have a national agency in the sense of that the Americans or the Chinese or the Indians or the Australians have it, because here on this continent, Christophe Goudler, we have this European Space Agency, which actually coordinates 23 national space policies. So you have some great ambitions in a way, but also a lot of duplication of efforts.
Yeah, the problem, in the past, I would say we will create an ESA in Europe. But now, when we see what's happening in the United States, NASA is not a big success because Trump cut a lot of money for NASA. But it's clear that today we have ESA, we have EUSPA in Prague, we have national agencies, we have DG DEFI working on defense on space. There's too much stakeholders. The first thing to do is to be coherent together. All the stakeholders together. We are in a global market. We need to fight globally, not against each other, inside the European Union. Yeah. And it is key to make a success of our space policy.
I want to have both of your thoughts on the role of Elon Musk, the tech billionaire close to Donald Trump. There have been negotiations happening between SpaceX and the Italian government, which are suspended for the moment. But your party in Belgium, Assita Kanker, the NVA, I think, has been a bit more positive, perhaps, on the role of Elon Musk than, say, French or German mainstream political thinking. What do you make of all that?
Well, I don't know where that came from. My party is leading the Belgian government, and we are around the table at the council to speak about the future of European defense and other key issues right now. So it's not about one man. However, what we stressed is that we need to preserve the transatlantic relationship, and that it is very important, regardless of who is president in the US. We cannot not have a relation with the US. The question is, what kind of relation do we want to have, and what kind of respect do we want to demand? That depends on our own, that is, how we are going to strengthen our own position in key files, and how transactional we want to be on other files. But when we go there and we have nothing, we have no money for our defense, we have no agreement inside the EU, we do not have the nose in the same direction for everyone, and we go and try to speak to a big player like the US, they are not going to take us seriously. They're going to overlook us. And that's what we are to be diplomatically strong. But regarding Elon Musk, it is one man who has a position in the government network of Trump. And I can understand that certain countries are worried about how much power does he have. And this is it's a relevant question to ask. It does not mean that we slam the door. It means that the conversation needs to find place and guarantees given.
I mean, the fact is he does have a lot more satellites than Europe does. And Ukraine is depending on Starlink. Presumably, if Ukraine could have an alternative like IRIS², they would perhaps be using that, but they're not. They're forced to use Starlink for the moment.
We have to wait till June in order to have GovSatcom, a European project, working. But today it's not possible, and it's clear that today we need to have Starlink to continue to give the signal to Ukraine. But what I want to say is that we are working for strategic autonomy of Europe. What does it mean? It means clearly that we need to have our destiny in our own hands,
exactly,
not depending on the humor of a businessman coming from America or where you want. We are in a European approach. You know that the space program, it's forbidden to non-European company. You know that IRIS² is forbidden to non-European company in order to use our satellites when we want, not depending of the willingness of other countries. And it is crucial for the future. If we have not an autonomous access to space, it will be a finish for our independence in Europe.
Your thoughts on IRIS², is it going to be a kind of savior or not?
Well, unfortunately, I cannot look in the future, but it will, whatever it becomes, it will depend on what we do now, what we do as people and as EU.
I mean, of course, it's not going to come on stream till 2029 or 2030, but there are sort of interim measures. There's going to be some integration of existing systems already this year, I think. Do you see sort of major progress being made compared to, for example, American capabilities, or still not so much?
No, from what I hear, there is not serious progress, but it's in a couple of years still that we have a deadline, and generally we never have that big progress compared to American capabilities, and that is our biggest challenge, because we also tend to compare ourselves always with the Americans. I mean, why is it not that we make sure that we are in a position where other people are going to say, are we actually more capable than the Europeans? Why everyone say the Europeans are behind? They need to look at us, and we are just lagging behind. And this is what worries me, and we're going to work together to see whatever we can do.
As rapporteur of Iris Square, just let you know that GovSatcom is the first step of Iris Square. GovSatcom, it starts in June this year. And after that, we will have the launch of new satellites. It will be finished in 2028. Of course, it's two or maybe 3 years. It's a lot, but it's tomorrow. And it will be the first secure quantum telecommunication in the world. It will be a big success for Europe to show that we are able to have satellites with a very secure connectivity.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Final,
I just wanted to add that what I really adore about my colleague Christoph Gridler is the ambition and the will to go on, and I really love working with colleagues like that. I think that our ambition is maybe sometimes more, it's just bigger than what the EU is trying to achieve, and we need to push them into that direction, and then we'll be able to manage. So that's.
And also the fact that you're from quite different political ideologies, but you're working together on something that is obviously crucial for the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll end it there. Thank you so much to both of you, Asita Konko and Christoph Grudler. And thanks to all of you for watching us here on Talking Europe.
Thank you.